Sure, it's a little weird. Okay. So we're in Hilchot Deot, Perek Zayin, Halach Aleph. We're starting the seventh chapter of Hilchot Deot. Hamiragel b'chaviro. Now don't look. Everybody look up. What do you think it means to be miragel?
Miragel is spy.
Spy. So what do you think that means? What's the issue here? You're not supposed to spy on your friend.
Eavesdropping.
Nope.
Having information about your friend that he doesn't want you to have.
Nope. That's what I would have thought. Watch what we're talking about. Wild. Hamaragel b'chaviro over b'lo ta'aseh. Shenemar lo telech rachil ba'amecha. It's a prohibition to do whatever this is that we're calling miragel, because it says lo telech rachil ba'amecha. You're not supposed to gossip. Okay? Te'afa pishein lo kinal davar zeh avon gadolhu v'gorem larog nefashot rabot m'Israel. It causes to destroy many souls in Israel. Okay? What is l'ragel? L'ragel is to gossip. Rechilus. The pasuk of lo telech rechil b'mecha is clearly the pasuk of rechilus. Can somebody get me a vayikra with Rashi? Right behind you. Okay? This pasuk in Perek Yud Tet, most of Hilchot Deot, by the way, is in Parshat Kedoshim, in Perek Yud Tet, right? In the 19th chapter. And this is no exception. And all these, and by the way, we didn't go there because I once gave a series of shiurim on the Rambam's organizational system. Remember in leadership training when we had a discussion about organizational skills, right? So the Rambam was a master organizer. You can learn tremendous things from how his mind worked organizationally. Forget about content. And what he does is he takes the psukim, and Hilchot Deot is based on the order of the psukim. And when you look at Hilchot Deot that way, like for example, it says, Lo tisna tachicha bilvavecha, right? Okay? Hocheach tochiach tamitecha, velo tisa alavchet. So if you look at the order of the halachot in Perek Vav, first he has the halacha that you're not allowed to hate your friend and all that stuff. Then he talks about tocha. And then he talks about the fact that you have to be willing to forgive him and you can't keep a grudge because lo tisa alavchet. The order of the pasuk.
What do you think this intention?
And hang one second. And that therefore, when you see in the Rambam that for some reason he goes out of the order of the pasukim, it automatically raises a question that you wouldn't notice unless you did it that way. So I knew that we wouldn't have time to go there, right? But it's interesting, right? So if you look at this one, yeah, what were you going to say?
Why does he cite any sources?
What do you mean, cite sources?
Isn't that considered the main criticism of the whole Mishnah Torah, that he doesn't quote, like, except for Sufim, he doesn't, you know,
oh.
Gemara.
I'll tell you what I think.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Maybe I'll delineate what you're talking about. Part of the Rambam's gift of being a master organizer was that he was a genius. And I believe he had a photographic memory. I don't know any other way a person could do what he did, right? And a significant portion of the Mishnah Torah, he actually wrote in a cave. He was in hiding because I forget if it was in Fez or Cordoba. I think it was in Fez, in Egypt. He was sentenced to death. They wanted to kill him because politics. He was the doctor of the local caliph, and I'll spare you all the details. You can read a biography of the Rambam. But he was sitting in a cave. Like never mind that he didn't have a computer or a laptop or Google or the Bar Ilan computer. He didn't even have access to Sfarim. He didn't have Sfarim. He had very little. He just sat with pen and paper and wrote this stuff out. How do you do that? How do you organize in that way? It's mind-boggling. So it's clear that the Rambam knew all this stuff by heart. So there are two ways of understanding why the Rambam quotes from Bavli, Yerushalmi, right? The Jerusalem Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, the Medrashei Halacha. He knew Medrash. He knew Tanakh backwards and forwards. He clearly knew some of the major issues in the Gaonim, right? He just had all that at his fingertips. So what you're asking is, why doesn't he quote? This is from the Yerushalmi, this is from the Bavli, whatever. So I'll tell you my theory. First of all, when it comes to Pesukim, there was a general understanding, especially in the Sephardic world, okay? Do you remember, or you weren't there, I told you about when I took my son in Yair's class to the Old City, and we stopped in, what's it called, in that school, name is running out of my head, where these guys know Mishnayos Baal Peh, you remember? Zilberman, right. And these two 14-year-olds came, they were in their grade, so they're 12-year-olds, 11, 12-year-olds, and they knew all of Seder Moed Baal Peh. Like the guys would pick up a Mishnah. I didn't tell you this. The guys would pick up a Mishnah and they would say, Shabbat, Paragimel, Mishnah, Dalet. And these guys would close their eyes and they would just start ranting forth. You know, Tzal Shanaim, Shem Arba, unbelievable, right? I was in awe. And in the Sephardi world, you find that all the time. You go to a Yemenite Balkore, okay? And in those days, they were all Balikriya. You go to a Yemenite Balkore and you say to him, I don't know, Vehevel hevi, and he'll say gamhu. Mibcharotuno michel vehen. Right? They just know that, right? And they knew all of Nach. All of they knew the stuff about that. So Psukim, I think he doesn't quote, because who doesn't know where Ochech Techech Tamitecha is? Except for me when I was giving shir once, but whatever, right? Okay, everybody knows that. Perek Yutet, Kedoshim, right? So that's one way of knowing it. Like he does in the halacha. You remember the other day in the mitzvot shir, and we were talking about Paretz Peretz Beuza. He doesn't even explain the story, because who doesn't know the story of the Aaron that was taken and came back, and Uza and Peretz Uza, and right? Know that stuff. So we're not on that level anymore. People don't know this stuff. When it comes to the other sources, I think that was the whole point of why he wrote the Mishnah Torah. I think that the generation of Jews at that time, with all of the difficulties they were going through, between being crushed on the one hand by the Almohades and on the other hand by the Catholic Church, and exile. I mean, he was forced out of Cordoba when he was like 12 or 13 years old, and this is, you know, 100 and some, 200 years before the Inquisition, but you were starting that period where Jews weren't safe and there was a lot of movement. So he realized Jews didn't have access to Sfarim and they couldn't look this stuff up. They weren't as literate. So he didn't see a point of quoting from all over Shas because he wanted to give them the basic halachot. Right? That's how I look at it. It could be wrong, whatever. And there is value to that. But it's kind of like if you read the Sefer HaMitzvot HaKatzar of the Chafetz Chaim. Remember I once told you that in the Chafetz Chaim's days, they were drafting Jewish kids to the army, and they would go off at like 11, 12 years old, and they were drafted for 20 to 30 years. And they would come back, forget about being from, like they were done. So kids would cut off their thumbs or hide. The Chafetz Chaim himself, as a boy, changed his name so that they wouldn't find him, because otherwise they'd take you off to the Russian army. So he finally wrote a Sefer called the Sefer HaMitzvot HaKatzar, the short version of the mitzvot. It's actually published by Feldheim in one of these pocketbooks, right? And it's and it's basically like, I don't know, 180, 190 mitzvot. Like you don't need to know right now the mitzvah of the fact that when you build a mizbeach, you have to have a ramp. Or that you don't hew the stone, right? And you don't need to know the mitzvot, or at least in his day, today we actually do, you won't find Shemitah in there. Because they were in Russia. But you'll find tzitzis and tefillin and, you know, et cetera, right? So he doesn't quote sources either. He just tells you, this is what the mitzvah is. This is when it's applicable. It applies to men. It applies to women. Whatever. It's a page. Gemara. Same idea. So in Kedoshim, it says, in Perek Yitet, in Pasuk Tet Zayin, Lo telech rachil ba'amecha, lo tamod al dam reyacha. You're not supposed to gossip. And don't stand idly by while your neighbor's blood is spilled. Right? So Rashi says, Lo telech rachil be'amecha. I think it's here. Hang on. One second. Why does it say Lo telech rachil? It should say Lo tedaber rechilot. Don't speak gossip. It says, don't go gossip. So why do you think it says don't go gossip?
Don't go gossiping. Like,
yeah, fine.
It's not only a... Right now, I hit Zebe. I'm hitting Zebe.
Right.
It's like a state rather than a one-time action.
No, but if I was standing in front of him, no, you shouldn't go and be gossip. So someone would say, well, you don't actually go gossip. You spread gossip. You share gossip.
You should be a gossip. You should go and be a gossip. You should go gossip.
Well, why go?
Because you have to, in order to gossip, you actually have to go out of your way to do it. It's not something that just
right.
You can just say.
It's the nature of the gossiper that he's, it's not just that something comes your way. There's a certain type of person who's a gossiper, a gossip, right? So the Rashi says here, Ani omer al shem shekol mishalchei madanim u'mesaprei lashon hara. It's like you get invited to somebody for Shabbos lunch. So one type of person goes to Shabbos lunch, he's just excited at the opportunity to share Torah, talk, whatever. Somebody else is excited because he's going to get some juice. Right? I was in a program yesterday and I was invited to speak. And the person who spoke right before me was Alan Dershowitz. So I found myself sitting next to him before I got up to speak, whatever. Yesterday morning, yeah. So I found myself... Alan Dershowitz is a well-known Harvard attorney, law professor, and whatever. He's in the Jerusalem Post all the time, whatever. He wrote The Case for Israel. Good book. Anyway, so some people would sit next to a person like that and figure like, okay, you know, it's just an honor to sit next to a person like that. You get to give hakarat hatov to someone. I feel like I gained a lot from a few of his books. I don't agree with him on everything, but that's okay. And that's all I did. I said, you know, it's an honor to sit next to you, and it's nice to meet you, and you've done great things, and continue your work. That's all. Some people would sit next to a person like that, they get all excited because they get to get some, can I get him into a conversation so that next week I can sit down at a table and say, you know, I was talking to Alan Dershowitz, right? You understand? And some people go and they're looking at him, right? Because they want some juice. So I can say later, you know, I noticed, I saw Alan Dershowitz's shoes didn't match his Nebuch. You know, he has a terrible haircut. You know, people do that thing. You're going out, you're looking, you're hunting. Not good to be that way. Right? Holchim b'beteirayim l'ragel ma'yirura or ma'yishmura. You like to look for the bad stuff. Right? Not a good way. L'saper pashuk, you can tell it over. Nikraim holchei rachil. And they're called people who go gossip. They're gossip mongers. Right? Holchei rigila. V'raya l'dvari shelo matzinu rechilut she'en katuv b'lashon alicha. You don't find the topic of rechilut, of gossip, without the journeying, the walking. Right? Lo telech achil, holchei achil, nechoshetu barzel, you see that in Yirmiyahu, etc., etc. V'shar lashon hara, ein katuv bo halicha. Right? Milashnei b'seter reyu, lashon rimya. Right? In other types of lashon hara, you find that deceit, it doesn't talk about walking. So this is a specific type of lashon hara, of gossip, really, that's called rechilut, that involves journeying. You have to be a certain type of person to be a gossiper. You have to go look for these things. It's not good to be that way. Don't look for the bad in people. Don't be spying out. So the Rambam goes a stage further. And the Rambam uses the word liragel. Now, where do we find the word liragel? Obviously, the Meraglim. And what was the issue with the Meraglim? Because when the Meraglim come back, so they're the ones who came up with the famous phrase, actually HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, but whatever, right? Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvashi, right? But Ephes, however, and I've spoken to you about this before, whenever you hear a however, everybody listens to what comes after the but, right? Always. If you have something important to share with someone, and you want to dress them down because you need to, and you start with something good, they're always waiting for the but. You know, I want you to know you're really a valued employee. And we value the fact that you're here. The person isn't even hearing that. He's just waiting for the but. Don't do it that way. Start the conversation and say, listen, I know this is hard for you to hear, but you need to be on time. It's just not working that you're not on time. But I want you to know that you're a really valued employee. They'll get the messer, right? But they'll walk away with a feeling that at least I'm valued. Very valuable to do that, especially in your personal relationships, you know, right? Don't come home and say, listen, I love the fact that you make dinner, and I love the fact that the kitchen looks so good.
But we're getting divorced.
But I can't handle this dog, right? He just, right? So Hamaragel b'chaviro. So the Rambam is saying, right, that rechilut is really a form of regal. The Meraglim were looking to diss Eretz Yisrael because they didn't want to leave the desert. They didn't want to go in, right? So it teaches you, by the way, about the Meraglim, but that's what rechilut is.
Why did they want to leave the desert?
And you have 1 second. And that's another discussion. And not only that, but don't forget your question because it's a good question, right? That's a Thursday night question. So not only that, right? But rechilut, right? When do you catch yourself doing rechilut? So most people, you're sitting at a table and you start to gossip. And if you're lucky, you have a kid who's in third grade who just learned halachas of lashon hara, and he says lashon hara, right? And you get a lot of parents like, okay, shh, you know what? Why don't you go play upstairs, right? You know, that's terrible. Like, this kid just gave you a bracha. Stop rechilus. But that's not when you should stop rechilus. That's late in the game. When you should stop rechilus is when you find yourself in a situation where you're noticing something and you're seeing something negative and you're starting to store it because you know it'll be good juice to share. Let go of that. Push that out of your mind. Not good to be that way. There are many instances in life where you have to see the downside to things. But if you find yourself looking for that sort of thing, it's an unhealthy way to be. Most people, they don't even think about that. There's a whole industry in America that's designed for gossip. It's an incredibly destructive, unhealthy, terrible, terrible industry. And you even have to be careful. You know, like I used to work out, pardon? Oh, I used to work out sometimes to Oprah Winfrey. Until after a while, I found that like 50% of what she was doing, I couldn't listen to. Because of Mama Shrachilos. So you could debate with a lalacha if it's already on the news whether you're allowed to hear it. That's a legitimate debate, right? If you're reading something in the paper, it's already there. Pardon? Yeah, absolutely. Pardon? It's a machlokas. Big machlokas of whether it's known. What if you're in a different community that it isn't heard? It's very complicated. I had a Rebbe who used to say the best thing. You know what? No one ever got into trouble for not listening to Achilles. Like, don't be such a tzaddik, you know what I mean? But it's a legitimate question, right? But
you're obligated, you would call it
100%. But your Yetzirah obligates you in lots of places where you don't need to be obligated. Like today, I don't know, Ehud Olmert is called into questioning. So you can imagine all the newspaper reporters, I'm sure that they're all going to talk about, is he going to be arrested? Is he questioned? Did he do it? Did he not do it? So I think that there's a group of people that need to be a party to that question. And I think that there's a value to the message that's being sent to Am Yisrael, that a person even in a high level of politics is not above the law. But do I need to know the ins and outs of what he did and whether he did and whatever? No. So just because it's on the news, and I don't think you're over the Yitzhak Vachilas by sharing this, doesn't mean it's healthy for your neshama. Right? That's a thought process. And this thought process is not something you learn in a Rambam and then you put it away. If you don't make this an active part of your life, this stuff, it either makes you a better person or it brings you down. And of all the industries, of all the types of human behavior that are destructive, I know of none that are worse than this. The whole Lashon Hara Rechilos Fest that we do all the time. There isn't a yeshiva in the world that doesn't struggle from this issue. Doesn't happen. Right? You get a guy and he's always waking up late, and two guys are sitting at Breakfast with Wizards. No, no, no. It's George, you know.
Classic George.
Classic George. Where's George? Right? That's Rechilos. Mamash Rechilos. In fact, in that case, it's probably Lashon Hara. Right? And you don't think twice about it. But you just spent 1 second. You just spent the whole morning davening, and you put tefillin on, you feel so good because you're doing mitzvah. Then you go in there and you basically wipe it off the mat. You'd be better off, no suffix. You'd be better off sleeping late and not talking Rechilos. Notice we didn't get to this all until the end of the year. Yes.
What if you're venting about somebody?
Depends who you're venting to and how you're venting.
But you're venting with each other, you know, and about somebody.
Not healthy.
But and you're venting about him, and like you're thinking, well, we want to help this guy to make him better.
Why do you have to vent to help him?
I don't know. Other people do it.
If you come, I don't call that venting. My definition of venting is that you're sharing stuff because you just want to get it off your chest.
Right,
that's not healthy. But it is healthy to have the appropriate addresses to vent. Some people do it with a therapist. Right? I wish I had time to go to a therapist. I think therapy would be valuable for 99% of the population. I'm sure I would gain from it. I don't have time. But Baruch Hashem, I have a wife, she's my therapist. Right? So I can vent to her. That's halachically allowed. Halachically it's understood. In fact, oh, don't leave a guy hanging. Don't ever leave a guy hanging. That's right. Not allowed to leave a guy hanging ever, right? But no, that's a healthy. The halacha talks about ishto kegufo. We'll see what the Rambam says. And therefore, when you share with your wife, it's not like you're sharing with someone else. There's halachic isser to share with other people what your husband or wife told you, except in special circumstances. And even in civil law, there are all sorts of protections for individuals being able to share with their spouse because there's an assumption of privacy, whatever, right?
What about sharing with your writing or diary that you don't share with anyone else that your wife shares with you?
What?
I guess that's a case-dependent question. In other words, like the whole question of a diary is an interesting question.
So you are allowed to share with your wife?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But you have to be smart about what and how you share with your wife.
Could you give a distinction, like very brief, on the difference between Rechilos and Lashon Hara?
Sure. Lashon Hara is something with a negative connotation. You're saying something, we're going to get into this, something that where you say something that is clearly bad about an individual, right? Like, did you see that Misha, he steals the ball all the time when he plays basketball, right? It could be. It could be, right? But, you know, right?
It doesn't really matter.
You know, we had a boy last year, great kid. I mean, you're all great kids, but he actually took pride in the fact that he didn't shower all week. He got into the learning.
Whoa.
Pardon?
Coasting,
is that what it's called?
Yeah, Friday.
Look at that. That is the second major term I've learned from you this year.
The first
was FOMA. Yeah.
FOMO.
Fear of missing out, right? Coasting.
Only happens in camps.
Anyway, this guy. Anyway, whatever. So this guy. So fine. So it doesn't matter. And you know, whatever. And the guys were joking about it, and he was sitting at the table, right? And it didn't bother him. Like, I think it didn't bother him. Whatever it is. So if you're talking about that and you're saying, oh, you know, George doesn't shower like all week, whatever, and it doesn't bother him, then it could be that that's Rechilos. You know, check out Zevi's shirt. Right? You know, like, that's Rechilos. You don't necessarily say something bad. You might like his shirt. But you're gossiping. You're sharing information, but there's no need to share the information. There's no value. On the other hand, if you're saying, if Misha told you, you know, my shirt ripped and I need to get a new shirt, and you said, well, check out Zevi's shirt because I saw some of those on sale, so then there's some purpose to it, so that might not be Rechilus.
We had a discussion at the beginning of the year about how men in general usually only, you know, discuss things when there's a purpose to it, whereas women will just talk about things to build a relationship. You might say, you know, the conversation inherently has no purpose, but it's building a relationship, so could you somehow use, like, if you can't do it, what's something pointless that you
First of all, I don't agree. You might say more often that I would buy.
Oh, you might not agree that's a good thing to do.
No. I don't necessarily agree that men don't talk about things that have no purpose. I think men do that all the time. They just do it on different topics, sports, like sports.
Yeah, sports.
Right? No, I've heard men talk about... No, I've heard men talk about, you know, why Michael Jordan, you know, goes gambling... And, you know, how much money he made and all sorts of stuff like that. I don't know what the purpose of it is, right? They talk about how much he makes and how much you make and, you know, what stocks did he buy and did you see his Lexus, you know, whatever. I mean, guy bought a Lexus. It's public knowledge he has a Lexus because he's driving around in it. But if you're sharing the fact that he has a Lexus with someone else, that's rechilus. Because somebody could easily say, right? By the way, one of the ways of defining the difference between Lashon Hara and rechilus is that when you spoke Lashon Hara, you're saying something bad about someone. It could be true. But still Lashon Hara. When you speak Rechilas about something, you're not saying something bad about something, but it may inevitably lead to saying something bad about something.
Or maybe it's jealousy.
That's the Chafetz Chaim's definition. What?
Or maybe it's jealousy.
Or may lead to all sorts of negative things, yeah.
But what if the purpose of what you're saying, let's say...
What if the what?
Well, let's say I'm talking to you, and I want you to think more positively of Zevi's fashion style, because I love Zevi, and I want you to think positively of him too, so I say, look at Zevi's shirt, it's really awesome.
That might not be Rechilas.
Okay.
It depends, right?
You never know what he's thinking. You might say, well...
No, like if I'm... No, like...
But the purpose is to...
Like, let's say my son... Let's say a teacher comes along, and he thinks that he has a student, 10-year-old, who doesn't have such a great self-image. And he thinks that the fact that the kid doesn't have a self-image is the fact that his dad doesn't express enough his appreciation. And he happens to be sitting next to the dad, and he's watching the boy do something. And he says... Look at that boy. Look, that's incredible. Look how good he is at whatever, right? He's doing it for a purpose. So that's not Rechilus, right? On the other hand, if he's just sitting with another teacher, right? And he's just saying, look at that boy. Look how good he is. Look how good he is. Then I'm not sure that it is. You have to be very careful with Rechilus. Hamaragel b'chaviro over belota said. The Rambam here seems to be talking about where you look for bad. You're looking for juice, right?
So what about journalists?
Pardon?
What about journalists?
Journalism is a very problematic profession. No, seriously. It's a very problematic profession. It can, and it doesn't mean it's a bad profession. You can do tremendous good. I mean, look what happened at Watergate. It was basically two journalists that uncovered a level of corruption in government that was important. And it affected America. And it ultimately affected the world. Right? There was the head of the Treasury, the Minister of the Treasury, who was caught basically embezzling money. You know, pension funds and whatever. And it was his secretary. Who spilled the beans to a journalist. And that uncovered a whole level of corruption, and he's now sitting in jail. And in my opinion, as much as it's a chilul Hashem, it's a terrible thing, it's a good thing. Because if a person's, you know, a minister of finance, and he's stealing, that's a problem, right? But on the other hand, journalists do terrible things. And they, you know, they there was a famous Israeli movie star and singer, entertainer, whatever, named Dudu Topaz. And... there's a whole story. He apparently, supposedly, hired somebody to beat up a couple of television producers because they didn't give him a show. I don't remember all the details. And journalists found out about it, and they broke the story, and then they didn't let it go. And they gave him a tough time, and they started running after his wife and his kids and all this stuff, and eventually committed suicide in prison. Couldn't face the shame. And I'm not talking about whether halachically those journalists are responsible, but does the public need to know? Does the public need to speak to the son of an entertainer to know how he feels that his father may have done a crime? No. So that's a problem. Freedom of press and its relationship to democracy is a very difficult question. And freedom of speech is not always a good thing. And this goes, this is directly against the American Constitution. It would seem to be that freedom of speech, you know, that's the famous Oliver Wendell.
Maybe we should switch the definition on freedom of speech.
Well, 1 second. That's the famous Oliver Wendell Holmes line, who says that freedom of speech is all well and good, but that doesn't mean that somebody has the freedom to yell fire in a crowded movie theater, right? So it's an interesting question, and it exists. Anywhere you have freedom of speech, you have this question. I think that Judaism has much healthier borders and boundaries for the use of free speech. And I think that the world would do well, and certainly Western press credentials would do well, or journalists, to learn from these halachot. And we would live in a better world if we had newspapers without rechilas. No doubt about it. Make sense? Yeah? So let's see. So you're over an isser. Like, you don't think about this. Right? Like, and by the way, that isser is every bit as severe as eating a piece of pork. Same issue. Whether you get malchus is only whether it's definable and whether it's an action, whether speech is an action. But if you're sitting at a table and two of you, one of you is sitting talking rechilas and the other is eating a pork sandwich, in terms of the implication, the consequence, et cetera, there's absolutely no difference. They're just two different isserim. Right? Huge. People don't appreciate that. You know, could you imagine your father sitting down with you when you get home from yeshiva and say, let's have some pork? You couldn't imagine it. But could you imagine your father sitting down, I'm telling rechilas about your father, that's good. But you get my point, right? People do this all the time, right? By the way, although this isn't our topic, you have to be very, very careful with these halachot, because I don't know of a set of halachot that put you into a more challenging position in terms of how you relate to others. If I go to your house, to someone's house on Shabbat, and they're not Shomer Shabbos, and they turn on the TV and they're blaring the radio and they're serving treif meat, I can navigate that without imposing on another individual. But there's really very little way to navigate the prohibitions of Rechilus and Lashon Hara without imposing on other individuals. If you're sitting at a Shabbos table,
like this.
If you're sitting at a Shabbos table and people are gossiping, right, you basically have two choices. You can try to change the conversation. Let's talk about more pleasant things, which presumes a relationship, which is already bordering on tochacha, not an easy thing to do. Or you can get up and leave, right? How many times do you get up and go to the bathroom? Or you're stuck listening to it. You know, it's a very difficult problem. And I don't even have good advice for you. I've navigated this for many years, and sometimes I succeed and sometimes I don't. But at the least, we should be sensitive to it. Even though you don't get malchus, you don't get lashes, because it's not an action. Avon gadolhu. This is a big problem, the Rambam is saying. Chafetz Chaim believed that more than any other single issue in Judaism, Rechilus and Lashon Hara, speech, is the major issue that's preventing Geula. Said if we could conquer Lashon Hara, we would all come home. Mashiach would come and the Beit HaMikdash would be built. This is the biggest issue. That's why you have all these Lashon Hara campaigns. By the way, I want to highly recommend
And Rechilut.
Yeah. I want to highly recommend studying the Sefer of Shmiras HaLashon. It's a good Sefer to study. Go into the Sefer knowing it will be very, very difficult to live up to all the halachot. But just the fact, you know, it's like tzniut. I'll give you an example. You may not decide, and maybe this is more of a topic for girls, but you know, you meet a girl and she comes from a certain background, and you know, when do you study tzniut and when do you study tzniut? So somebody studies tzniut and they go back to America and they still maybe dress a little different, whatever. Just the fact that you've studied this material and now you're sensitive to it as an issue is a valuable thing. Like if a girl could leave a year in Israel in yeshiva and then go back home and go swimming in a bikini, it happens. But if a girl could leave a year in Israel in yeshiva and then come, let's say, to my house for Shabbos and sit in a bikini at the Shabbos table, something's wrong. Right? It's not about where a person is at, but just sensitivity to the issue. So studying the laws of Lashon Hara, it just makes you sensitive to how speech affects us and how we affect others. And at least, you know, I know people in my life that I can't think of a time when they said something negative about someone. That's at least where you want to try to get to. We don't all succeed, and it's a problem, but we have to at least try. Make sense, right? And by the way, if you think that I'm hesitant to give a lecture about smoking, because when I was in the army I smoked, that's nothing compared to this topic. Like, for all the years that I've been trying to deal with this, I don't remember a week when I haven't caught myself being over an issur of rechilas and lashon hara. You can't. It's very hard. You sit around and you're talking about, I don't know, you're talking about you guys. We have a meeting and we're going through, like, where are guys at and how can we help them, whatever. And someone makes a crack. It's normal, just like I'm sure you do it about us. It's normal, right? And you don't think about it. You're just over an Isser of Rechilas and possibly Lashon Hara. And Nach, you're supposed to be the Rebbe. It's horrendous. I remember when I was in Machon Meir, I had a yeshiva called Harel. I told you about it once. And there was a Rebbe there. He was a tzaddik. He was mamash a tzaddik. And at the beginning of the year, the guys didn't know what to do with him. He was a little off. He used to sit in tefillin all day. And he was very soft-spoken, very, very calm, very passive, vegetarian. And he was, this was like one of his mitzvot. And we would have a teacher's meeting. He would visibly be in pain at the thought of the fact that he had to share some information about a student that would reflect negatively on that student. And when he was in the teacher's meetings, we all found ourselves speaking on a higher level. It was amazing to see his impact, certainly on me. Like, I gave much more, to this day, I give much more thought to having a conversation about anyone, and certainly in a teacher's meeting, just thinking about how he affected me. So it's valuable to be sensitive to this.
The idea that if a person's doing something wrong and they don't know it, it's a shogeg, but if you tell them, it would make it worse because then they're doing it. But maybe if they were to be, if you know that they're to continue to do it. Like, let's say, there's some examples that are better than others, but let's say you know.
This is a great example.
So, yeah, so I'm saying this is something that's very, like we just said, it's very, very, very hard to change. But even, say, a girl swimming, like that's something like just knowing where she's working in the summer, whatever.
So I'll tell you what the Shulchan Aruch paskins and the Ramah and the Mishnah Berurah. And if you want, I'm happy to take this out and we can go through the halacha here because it's a valuable halacha. The Ramah, who talks about, you know, an instance of mutav shiyu shogegin, in other words, if I understand your question correctly, right, there's a halacha in the halachos of Erev Yom Kippur, that there were women who used to continue to eat
until it got dark.
And really, you're supposed to have a tosefet, you know, you're supposed to start the fast early, just like you do on Shabbos with candlelighting. So the Shulchan Aruch paskens, you shouldn't tell these people that they're ein mochin be'adim. Don't try to stop them from eating on Erev Yom Kippur, right? Because mutav shiyu shogegin, better that they should do it by mistake, right? So the Ramah there and the Mishnah Berurah talk about the fact that that's a durabanan, right? That's a durabanan. Do you say the same thing about a durabanan? So the Ramah says, pardon?
Or shwarambar.
Or shwarambar, huh?
Shwarambar is the
peanut butter.
Across from Burger's Bar, it's not kosher, and there was a flyer, Reb Nevinsol put up, or someone put up flyers, so that's a letter from Reb Nevinsol that the Heksher is not kosher. Is it fake too, though?
Right. I think right. that was at the beginning of the year and they changed it.
No, I know. No? No. Oh. So the question is like, if someone's in the middle of their sandwich.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay, same thing, right? Okay. So the Ramah and the Mishnah Berurah, right, basically suggest that even if it's Doraisa, that if you think that a person is going to continue to do it, better it should be Shogeg. However, the exception to that rule is, unless it's Mefurash B'Torah. If you see somebody lighting a fire on Shabbos, since that's something that's explicit in the Torah, that you don't leave them to do. And the Mishnah Berurah explains, again, if I'm getting this right, I haven't looked at this halacha in a while. Can you not? It's just distracting me, I think. Right? So the Mishnah Berurah says, thanks. The Mishnah Berurah says that that if because it's written beferish in the Torah, so he says it can't be that if you tell somebody about this, that he won't stop it because it's right beferish in the Torah. So there are mefarshim, there are poskim today who say, you know, there was once a time where people's respect, even people who are poshim, right, people who are sort of, you know, sinners or whatever you want to call them, they had such a respect for Torah, like the ones who were doing things wrong were on a higher level than today. But today, people don't know what the Torah is. It doesn't make a difference to them that it's written in the Torah. So then it could be that you would even stick to that. And that's a debate.
So is that
this is Mefurash in the Torah, however. So the assumption, for example, if I saw somebody talking with Chilus here, I wouldn't say Mutav Shiyu Shogigin, right? However, because I could say, listen, it's a fairish person in the Torah. However, what you can say is all the rules of Tochacha apply. If you're going to tell a person, you know, that's with Chilus, you can only tell it to a person if you know that... if you think you know that he's going to listen to you, if you have a relationship with him, 1 second. We talk ava. However, there's a second side. Because this isn't a question of somebody's eating a cheeseburger, right? And you have to decide whether you think he'll listen to you. Because here, he's trying to feed you the cheeseburger. That's what makes this so complicated.
Okay. But let's say, so is the part that you were saying about whether or not it's Mefarash B'Torah, is that concerning the assumption that you have to make about whether or not they'll change their behavior if you tell them? So is what you're trying to say that... that the assumption is that today most people are so off the derech or whatever that they won't necessarily change their activity?
I'm not saying it's an assumption, I'm saying it's a question.
It's a question. And that you shouldn't do it unless it's... But even, let's say with the cheeseburger, so would you say that the only time you should correct someone if they're doing a shogeg or maize is if they're actually like boiling a lamb in its mother's milk, past that not?
That's exactly right. Uh-huh. I mean, that's also a question of what the derech of this beferish in the Torah, but yeah.
Right?
So that's a complicated halacha. We can look at that if you want to look at that halacha, right? But okay. So V'gorem l'arog nefashot b'Yisrael. And this chait, this mistake of rechilut, of gossip, causes the death of many Jews. And two ways of looking at this halacha. Some people look at this as figuratively. In other words, you destroy a person. You know, you speak rechilut, you think about it. You have a business. And your business is, I don't know, you're a restaurateur. And then I go to your house in Shabbos, you're a wealthy guy, and you have like a chain of restaurants. And I notice that you come out of the bathroom and you didn't wash your hands. Right? So I start telling Rechilas to say, yeah, I went to his house, but you know what? Decided not to have the salad because he didn't wash his hands and he came out of the bathroom and he's the chef in the house, right? That's Rechilas. Right? That's classic Rechilas. Right? What do you know? But the people start to realize that this guy doesn't wash his hands and the word spreads like wildfire, and the next thing, people aren't eating in his restaurant. And the guy goes out of business and he goes bankrupt and you destroy a person. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just be very careful with this. L'kach nismachlo. I'll tell you the other problem, by the way, with this chait. When it comes to bin adam l'makom, chata'im that I have between me and Hashem. Oh, we have to stop. When it comes to chata'im that I have between me and Hashem, so I can fix it. I ate treif. It's not so good. I can do tshuva. I can change what I want. I can change who I am. I stole money from you. I can return it. When you speak rechilas, it's like taking, there's a famous story of, I think it was of Yisrael Salanter. But there's a butcher and they were speaking or chilas about him and somebody came and he wanted to do tshuva. Right? So he came to Yisrael Salanter. He said, how do I do tshuva? I spoke rechilas about him and now he's in a business. Right? So he takes a pillow full of feathers and he goes over the window and he rips it up and all the windows feathers go flying in the wind. And he says, I want you to go and catch all the feathers. It's ridiculous that they're blowing all over the town. You can't catch all the feathers. That's the problem with rechilas. You can't fix it. So you got to try to fix it before it happens. So let's stop here. It's 1:15. And Bezrat Hashem, we will continue into our journey into all the things that we love to do and can't.